For May the 3rd, 2019, we talk about Observer, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and we do more free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 283. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Trying out a new format today. Most of the same constituent parts just kind of shifted around. We got the whole gang here. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
I'm not sure what I expect when I just cast out to the room and say hi.
One of these days, no one will answer, and that's when reality will fall.
And that's when the show ends, I guess.
Is this a podcast battle royale?
It's like Sopranos, hard cut to silence.
Oh, but yeah, we've got this going on here. Yeah, so we didn't do our normal pre-show talking. So it's probably worth doing that. I forget. Hey Ben, how are things going up there?
Things are going pretty good. I had a family come in over the weekend. Ooh. So I had a busy weekend and not exactly sleep deprived, but I had 2 3-hour sleep sessions last night. So somewhere it feels weird. Just feels weird.
But your sleep was bifurcated.
Yeah. But
that's how the cool kids do it, right?
That's how they used to do it.
I guess so. Yeah. I don't know. I got to go to Amazon Go store over the weekend, which was fun. Where Ooh. You like walk in, you grab stuff, and then you feel like you're shoplifting when you walk out.
because it's tracking you with like scales and ARFID and cameras.
I know there's cameras and you like have to scan when you enter with like an app, and it's somehow when you scan in, it relates you to when you're walking around with the cameras, I guess. I don't know. It was interesting. And then it sends you a receipt afterwards. And so far out of 3 trips, it's been correct every time.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Huh. I mean, I'm positive that's that is where a lot of this stuff is going. When I go to the Apple store and I use the app, you know, to buy a dingus or a dongle or what have you. And you know, you just walk out. Like I still like, I'm like a Boy Scout. Like I walk up to the person at the front and I show them the phone and I show the thing I'm taking, and they are just so over me.
Please, sir, inspect me.
Tell me this is okay.
Well, I just don't want to be tackled by a rent-a-cop.
Yeah.
You know, it just, if I'm judging pass fail, that would be failure in that situation, is being tackled by a rent-a-cop. So
failure for who? I feel like that's a win for the rent-a-cop.
Well, I mean, you know, just everybody wants to feel like a hero. Yeah. Well, what kind of stuff were they selling at that store, Ben?
So it's mostly just like lunch and dinner stuff. So it's like a lot of like sandwiches, salads, like kind of single serving meals. They have a couple of like dinner things that are like make your own meals that are like $20. This sounds like a publicity thing, but it's not.
No.
Just like sodas and stuff. It's just like all like snack and like meal things. So it's very, I don't know, like single use items. It's like the opposite in the scale of like a Sam's Club or a Costco.
Yeah. No, just like an automated convenience store almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm down with that. Like I'm generally fine like talking to the person behind the counter, but like if I can just kind of ghost it and get in there and get out without needing to engage, that feels fine, although it also feels dangerous. I don't know.
Anything I can do to avoid human interaction, I'm all about that.
So funnily enough, they still have a person in the store, but it's to guard the alcohol aisle. So they check your ID if you walk in that aisle. Yeah.
Okay.
They're certified too, if someone, you know, grabs stuff and runs out without paying, to kind of vaguely go, hey.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
I mean, most retail stores, their shoplifting policy, unless you are a loss prevention officer, is like, let it happen, but report it. Like, don't be a hero, because you know, it's literally like your health and safety is worth more to the company, you know, in insurance payouts and stuff than Yeah.
I feel like that's one of the many things that is wrong with this nation.
I mean, I don't know. I cannot think of a single, you know, like in my brief history in retail, I don't know that I would feel and like it was worth it to me to put my life on the line to protect any amount of property, you know.
That's because you can still feel without putting your life on the edge.
See, I feel like it's not so much about protecting any amount of property, it's about breaking any amount of criminal.
Yeah, I don't know. I also don't care.
Gotta protect those GameStop assets.
Yeah, no. Fuck it. Take it. Like we paid $2 for that used game. So
see, I feel like at that point you'd be
What used game did you get $2 for?
A brand new release came out last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, I feel like at the point where someone's robbing a GameStop, you're duty bound to inform them that there are much better crimes they can commit with the help of GameStop.
Or ask them if they want to trade in their gun for store credit.
Ooh.
Hey, 15 cents. Oh, I can't shoot you now.
And that's how the game is won. How are you, Dennis?
I'm good. I am in fear and trepidation mode for the half marathon coming up that I'm anticipating running.
Oh yeah, the pig.
Yeah, half flying pig.
I read that book, Fear and Trepidation Mode in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so it's coming up. I think I'll be okay, counting on the race day adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I will be around after Sunday.
I mean, there are lots of people there and there are medical professionals. I doubt you're going to die. I'm not saying it's not going to suck, but.
Well, I was told there would be like a fighting someone to the death part about halfway through. Is that not a thing? Is that not how marathons work?
You know what? I'm not subscribed to their newsletter. They may have changed it.
I did not read the waiver carefully when I said that.
We know that at least one marathon started that way.
We're bringing it back.
Yes, oh, yes,
man.
Isn't that most like adventure? See, Jala's not here, so I can do this. Isn't that most adventure races? Like, I just want to be as close to death as possible.
To be fair, have you ever looked at modern pentathlon?
No, I think I would die just from looking at it.
How far are you running now, Dennis?
8 was the long one I did.
Nice. And
fairly comfortably, like I can go out and turn in 5 like it was nothing.
Mm.
So as long as I don't have like, you know, my shoe give me blisters or something like that, which I should be all right on. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. How about you, David?
Not too much. My, parents visited, this weekend. So, went and, did a tour of the, 9/11 memorial and then the new Freedom Tower.
Okay.
So, that was, you know, kind of respectively very sobering and then really cool.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, tallest building in the Western Hemisphere. So you can basically see the entire, you know, city as well as Jersey City from there.
Hmm.
And then went and saw Wicked on Broadway.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good. I'm a big fan of musicals, and say this one, the acting was amazing, and very good story. I'd say the musical itself didn't particularly wow me. Just there's not much in terms of like songs that I would say would like stand on their own apart from specifically, you know, advancing the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still, I mean, still really great performance. You know, lot of fun there.
Yeah. I've never seen Wicked, but I've been to enough auditions and heard enough people, enough girls specifically singing Defying Gravity to feel like I have a pretty good idea of what it is.
So that's the only song, right?
Yep. It's just
fairly certain.
It's just Defying Gravity.
Usually
over
the
over
one
again.
I hear is Popular.
Oh, Popular. Also that is another one.
No, I'm pretty sure it's just defying gravity.
I forgot about popular.
Popular, I don't know. To me, like, in context, defying gravity strikes me as kind of having mixed messages.
I also don't know the lyrics to it. I just know that
I know one of the lyrics to it.
Yeah. the defying gravity was let it go before let it go.
It was. Basically she has magic that is 100% powered by monkey's paws.
Okay.
And appropriate enough results in flying monkeys, which leads directly into defying gravity. I don't know. I will maintain it's a very weird part of the musical.
Very good. Awesome. Well, is that just a real family heavy weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
No, this past weekend or this past week was when I figured out that I am continuing my transformation into a suburbanite, because I have become a lawn guy. after the winter, I stood out on my back porch and I surveyed my lawn. And I realized that it was a quarter acre piece of shit just smeared across the bedrock. And so I decided to get my shit together, and I mowed it, and I put down a bunch of fertilizer, and I seeded all the bare patches, and I'm watching it grow in, and I'm watching YouTube. But still, yeah, I take it real personally. Every single dandelion that pops up is just a middle finger sticking out of the earth right at me.
What kind of bears are you growing in your bear patches?
Wow. Okay. I thought of that joke, but wasn't going to go with it.
Dennis is the only dad.
You are not a dad.
Yeah. Thank you for putting that in perspective, Dennis. Thank you. but Dennis, as the other homeowner, have you, like, how did you grapple with that transition to literally, like, this is my plot of land, I must tend to it, and
yeah,
and any deficiency in my lands is a deficiency in me. Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I dealt with it by outsourcing as much of it as possible as fast as possible.
Okay.
Oh, no. So we found this year for mulch, because mulch is a whole new bag of stuff.
Yeah.
Pun not intended, actually. But we found it was like a Boy Scout-esque kind of deal where they not only gave you a great deal on the mulch, but also were relatively cheap to put it down.
Yeah.
And just had an army.
Use child labor.
Yeah, an army of 12.
I was going to say, I enjoy the fact that when presented with, like, this is my land for which I'm responsible, you skip directly to, clearly I need some serfs.
Jeez. That's really baked in, isn't it?
It was adorable. It was like, thank you, sir.
I had a bunch of preteens come to my door and offer to sell me mulch, but they didn't offer to lay it down. Also, I don't really have any landscaping to speak of. To this year's project and possibly next year's project is just getting the turf together.
Yeah. So. Last year I fucked it up, though. I accidentally got popcorn spread all over my yard.
Ah, damn it.
I gotta keep those straight.
Yeah, yeah. And then all the Samoas brought in raccoons.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Randomly enough, with the dandelion things, Dennis did what was the Chinese professor with Professor J?
Wait, nope, never mind. Backing up. Say again.
Wait, say that again?
Yeah, ask your question. I thought you were going a different direction.
No, I think it's Professor Jade. Did she ever tell you her story about dandelions?
No.
So she was talking about just things when she, moved to the States from China, just, things that don't quite cross cultural boundaries. And apparently one of them was, like, she was absolutely thrilled when dandelions started growing in her front yard.
Yeah.
That's funny.
No, see, that's the thing. I like dandelions. I think they're really pretty. It just, mm-hmm. it's neat. I just like them, but I know there's this weird hive mind in suburbia that I look at those dandelions and I think they don't know that I like them and like what part of the dirt is mine and they will be liked on. So if I don't take care of these, they will spread to my neighbors and my neighbors might not like dandelions as much as I do.
That sounds like a great reason to have dandelions.
I'm spreading them. I'm sharing them with my neighbors on the cul-de-sac here. No. So I feel like it's my responsibility to keep my yard in control because it can spread. It becomes like a tragedy of the commons kind of thing. I don't want to be the person. I don't want to be patient zero for this.
So just throwing it out there, you're pretty much 100% doing tragedy of the commons wrong.
Well, no, just by being the one person who is trying to keep the commons together.
Yep. Cole, if everyone was that responsible, it wouldn't be a tragedy of the commons.
You know,
think of the example you're setting.
Yeah, no. Okay, so I don't want to be the freeloader in that situation. It doesn't stand with my pride, you know? Oh, but that's what's going on. Everything is different now with this new stuff. But we're going to be doing the new kind of show here with, let's see here, the grind, the multiplayer, and then let's just call them the end bosses, the things that we're excited about. So let's get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past week or so. All of us have been here, at least all of us were here last week. So you know what? Nya nya, I'm going to get started.
Do it!
Yeah. Over these past couple of weekends on Hex Crank Live, I have been playing a game called Observer. This is a first-person cyberpunk survival horror game. By the people who made Layers of Fear. David, you were playing that recently, right? Somebody was recently playing Layers of Fear. Okay. This is by that same team. It is really cool. So one of the main things that they marketed it with is that they've got big name voice talent. Specifically, the main character is voiced by Rutger Hauer, the actor who most of us will know from playing Roy Batty in Blade Runner, right? And he said, what?
I said, who?
you see, he's the guy who in Blade Runner I've seen things you wouldn't believe. Sea beams glittering off the shoulder of Orion. What's it? Something at the Tannhauser, ships on fire at the Tannhauser gate. And then, time to die. Like, he's that guy.
Okay.
Have you seen Blade Runner, Ben?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. So were you just trying to like perturb me?
No, I legit didn't know who it was until you gave the speech.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, he was a big actor in the 80s, at least in kind of sci-fi-ish movies and things. And they brought him here for this. Observer is really cool. So there's no real combat. They do add stealth to this, which is new compared to Layers of Fear. The stealth is horrible. Fortunately, it only crops up in a couple of spots. Unfortunately, it's not till like halfway through and at the very end. So it is the game saying, well, you know what? Just cracking us knuckles. Let's just try our hand at this stealth thing, and it sucks all of the joy out of the pacing of it, which is a bummer. However, aesthetically, this is an incredibly strong game, because kind of the premise is your character you're playing as an observer, which is somebody who kind of works for the megacorp that is that is ruling over this kind of post-apocalyptic society. It's Poland in this case, after a deadly plague called the nanophage wiped everybody out. But as an observer, what you do is you investigate crimes and you look for dissidents by using a device called the Dream Eater to jump into people's memories. All right. And so you get a call from your son who you're estranged from, and it kind of implies that he's in, you know, terrible danger. And you go to this apartment complex, and there's some kind of event that cuts the entire building off from the rest of the network. So like when you walk in, everything looks okay, but it's all just AR that is being presented over this slum building that is happening. And you go around and you are kind of talking to the people inside their own little tenements through their door phones, kind of learning about the world. But the story advances when you plug into somebody's mind kind of check their memories and kind of try and see specifically things that related to Adam. But their memories and your memories and things like that are kind of intermixing, and you're navigating them. And it is this completely disorienting kind of mix up of geometries and world states and stories and things like that. And it takes that aspect of Layers of Fear, where you are navigating an inherently illogical space. And weirdly enough, pulls even more logic out of it, leaving you with this extremely, for lack of a better word, trippy and horrific and disjointed experience, where you are trying to discern truth from what is kind of constructed or synthesized. And then kind of ultimately, as the story goes on and your main character's kind of, you know, system starts failing, and you have to do kind of more desperate things and jump into, you know, kind of people who are in more desperate situations, the line between when you are, you know, in one of these sequences and not gets really blurred. It is incredibly effective. So nice. Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think that it's really good. I'm super hyped for Layers of Fear 2. The same team is, I think going to knock that out of the park based on what they've done in the past. So yeah, Observer is really good, you guys.
Cool.
How are the mini games in it?
thanks for bringing that up, Ben. because there's a little mini game, because everything is kind of this mixture of improbable future tech and like shabby retro tech. You've got like CRTs and you know, VHSs and stuff laying around, and there are old school terminals that you can find, like, you know, people's desktop computers. And there's kind of this persistent, almost Sokoban-esque game that you can play. I think it's called like Swords and Spiders, or Spiders and Fire Swords, or something like that. All I can remember is the tagline, which is "The spiders are at it again."
Oh, those rascally spiders!
Those spiders are at it again. But you know, it's like a little tile puzzle game kind of thing, where you have to navigate this little maze and you know, pick up a sword, and these spiders will follow you when you get within two tiles of them. And you know, the goal is there's a limited amount of swords. You have to get the spiders to kind of pile up on the same tile, and then kill a bunch of them at once, and while collecting all these coins, and also, you know, reaching the end of the level. I think there are like 9 levels. I only got to like 6 or 7 because it gets really hard. Like I couldn't discern what the way out would be. I trust that it's solvable, but I was on stream, and also I'm kind of dumb, so it didn't, really, you know,
it's not what you're there for.
Yeah.
Also, I refute that you're dumb.
Yes. No, but I just wasn't feeling it. So I played up until it was like, yeah, this feels impossible. And so I dropped it, but it was a neat little distraction.
I love the idea that there would be a mini game in a game like this.
Uh-huh.
And then they would subtly start having the game like cheat or break its own rules.
Oh, just yeah.
In the same way that like reality is bending around you in the main game.
Yeah.
And maybe not. It would do it in like a predictable way that you could eventually learn and figure out how to work around. And that could be a really interesting concept.
Like one thing that I think is missing from this, or feels like an opportunity that would have, you know, made for a better product, is if it was more integrated with the rest of the game. Like as you reach the upper levels of this, maybe certain aspects of it started showing up in the real world, like through your little neural interface kind of deal.
Well, because you're playing back like your own memories and stuff, or your own projections are on there. So I want Tetris effect in this game.
Yeah, and you're primarily walking around like hallways and stuff. So like if you just turned around a corner and there was a spider coming at you.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So thank you for bringing that up, Ben, because I totally forgot about swords and spiders or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Still haven't remembered it, but you kind of vaguely do.
Yes.
So is this like explicitly horror? Are there like monsters or ghosts or some such, or is it more just like unsettling weirdness? Is it jump scares? Kind of how does it play its hand?
It's explicitly horror. I mean, like there are points where like biological and technical monstrosities are chasing you around, and it is attempting to startle you and scare you and unsettle you. I would say it is as much of a horror, a piece of horror fiction as Layers of Fear is.
Okay.
Yeah. Just because it is, you know, just because Layers of Fear is kind of supernatural and, you know, Victorian or Edwardian. And this is futuristic. I think that this has equal claim. I don't think that makes too much of a difference as to how horrific it can be.
Sure.
Yeah. It's good. Ben, you watched it.
Yeah,
you watched some of it anyway. You weren't just a bit.
Yeah. The majority of it was swords and spiders. Probably.
Yes, probably. It's a real pretty game too. I'm happy that I was playing it on my upgraded computer because I could definitely tell. You know, there was a lot of really cool stuff going on. Like because you've got that little neural interface built in, and you've got a kind of a health meter called your synchronization or whatever. As your vitals start dropping, as your synchronization starts dropping, it starts doing these weird kind of like video artifacts, like compression artifacts on the screen as you're looking at it, so you can kind of tell.
Huh.
You can kind of tell, when your health is low by like, does this look like a YouTube video that is about to buffer? Right.
Nice.
And all that is a bunch of just really complex, like shader work that is going on. Yeah. Observer is really, really good.
How much is it?
I forget. I think it's like $20.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll look it up.
Yeah. I would give it to one of you guys, but I had a free copy and I gave it to Gary a while back. So womp, womp.
$30 on Steam.
$30. It's a relatively short game, so you know, can't say what $30 is worth to you or not. I would say at the very least watch for it to go on sale. By short game I mean like probably like 6 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Other than that, all I've been doing is Satisfactory. Sorry, Ben, I don't have a lot of Baba Is You to talk about.
You're good.
It's kind of stalled out for me, but Satisfactory, their big content patch comes out on the 30th, which is, I'm really excited about. It's the next part in their milestone. They're adding more tech trees in, more resources that you can do. And also they're adding in, conveyor lifts. So right now, if you want to get resources upward, you have to build these kind of just complicated pigtails of conveyor belts. Here, you're going to be able to just build a conveyor belt that will lift straight up, which will allow me to greatly compact my current factory design. So
is that more expensive, or are there drawbacks, or is it
I
just...
have no idea.
Uh-huh.
Do you know if you're going to be able to carry your factory over to the main game when it's released?
No idea.
All right.
Yeah. No idea. I'm just having fun. I've kind of resigned myself to being so excited about this game that I will follow it through its development. Yeah, the Satisfactory is incredibly good. And I'm doing all kinds of like watching YouTube videos about it and stuff. So. Just looking at other people's incredibly over the top factory designs and saying that is not necessary, sir, but I appreciate your, I appreciate your initiative. Yeah, cool. So that is me. I'm going to do something real quick here and say, Ben, what have you been playing?
Yo, all right. I got one old one, one new one. Old one, I've continued playing Call of Cthulhu. I think I only played maybe two more levels than where I was at last week.
Okay.
It's still pretty fun. I mean, I still enjoy it. I don't know. There's not much more to say. I mean, things get spookier, I guess. That's all that's really changed.
gets more psychological, more disorienting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They did introduce a new mechanic between last time and this time where it's like a panic attack mode, where if you see something that's like messed up, you basically need to leave whatever the area of the messed up stuff is, or your character, like, I don't know, something bad happens. You lose the game or something like that. Yeah. But
it's never been bad enough to catch you then.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's a good mechanic of it makes it so you, if they have like some stuff that like looks grotesque or whatever, you don't really have the time to like sit and inspect it and be like, that's not that great. Like like you walk through and you're like, wow, there's some messed up stuff here. And I wish I could stop and see it, but I will. Like, you know, so it does a good job of making it maybe more scary than it actually is by adding that mode. But yeah, so that's pretty cool. I don't really have too much to say about it outside of that though. The other game that I've been playing that's new is, well, the game's not new, but it's new for me, is I started playing Oxenfree.
Ooh, okay.
Oh.
Who's played this game so far?
I have not, but I know it by reputation.
Okay.
Same.
Okay. Have you played it, David?
I have not, and there's two games I always get mixed confused up with.
Which are those?
Okay, yes, the other I know which one this is. The other one's the one where you're wandering around the weird ship.
Yeah, Oberdin. Oberdin.
Oberdin. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I know of Oxenfree as the kind of side-scrolling horror walking sim. I know a lot of people get angry about it because they don't like it when teenagers talk. people talk about it with the same kind of disdain as Life is Strange in terms of its dialogue and stuff.
Okay.
Tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, so I played this game right after Celeste. So the fact that they take selfies like often is a little bit like I'm a little bit done with that mechanic. But no, I mean, it's fine. The dialogue's good. So the like one of the main mechanics of the game is just the dialogue system. The premise is you are high school students. It's like a group of, or maybe a little bit older, maybe somewhere between high school and college. So similar to Life is Strange. But it's you, your stepbrother, and a friend. It feels very much like Seattle because you're riding a ferry to an island to like hang out with high school friends and like drink booze and party or whatever on the beach. And then the story kind of goes from there. And like, you know, events happen or whatever. But the main mechanic of what you're doing is you can either, you know, you're walking around the map, but then you can talk to different people. And the way they do dialogue is it'll pop up options of what to say. And you always have a choice of just saying nothing or saying one of the pre-canned responses. But there you have like maybe like 5 seconds to decide. So it's like pretty quick. So you have to be like pretty on top of like the dialogue. Yeah. And so that's the main mechanic. And so like, there's not really anything like too RPG. Like it's not like they do bring up icons if you like make somebody upset, but I don't know the icons. The iconography is not good enough to know that. I don't know if I've made them upset or happy. It just shows like a character with another character, like in a thought bubble above them, you know,
that's me half the time in real life. Like, oh, I don't know if that made you happy or sad.
Yeah. yeah. So I don't know how deep those mechanics are, but it's kind of like a choose your own adventure apparently, where there's like a lot of different endings or a lot of different branches. But I'm only on my first playthrough, so I can't really attest to like how deep that is right now. I don't know. I don't want to give too much away about the story because that's kind of like the fun of it. The premise is, I don't know. It gets, I don't know, a little bit spooky maybe. I don't know. It's fun. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure novel. I don't know what else to say besides that.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
The art style kind of gave me shades of Broken Age. I don't know why, but it just reminded me of it.
Yeah.
It kind of, they're adjacent. Yeah. But I'm curious, like, does the game stay primarily grounded, or does it get off the rails pretty quick? Like, okay, clearly we're dealing with some supernatural crazy stuff.
I don't want to give too much away. It's not I'll say that it's not completely, does not seem to be completely grounded in reality at certain points. But it's kind of like Total Recall situation where it's like, it could be, but it could not be. Who knows?
Yeah.
But instead of doing like memory service, it's like, did you eat a weed brownie? Maybe that's what's going on right now. Who knows? Anyway, but it seems pretty good. I don't know how long it is, but I feel like I'm the majority of the way through. You can kind of see the entire map of the island from the get-go, and I've explored like 90% of it. So I feel like I'm closing in on the end of it. I mean, so far so good. It's a game I would not feel bad about paying like $5 to $10 for. The music's pretty good, and a lot of the settings are interesting too, because like even like the start where you're starting off on a ferry, there's like a lot of like interesting like animation going on in the background, or there's like a lot of cool like interesting like sets that they have, I guess, that you walk through, and then there's some pretty cool set pieces that are really inventive as far as like not time travel per se, but like kind of like similar to like stuff like that one Assassin's game or whatever, the one house, you know what I'm talking about? I'm gonna forget the name. It's the French like Hitman game, but it's the futuristic punk one. Dishonored, right? Dishonored 2, you know, like the
okay. The Professional, wasn't that the French Hitman game?
Yeah.
Or movie or whatever.
Yeah. So there's some cool mechanics in Oxenfree that come up later on, but yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Cool. Did you get that free on Epic?
No.
They gave it away, I think, a couple months ago, something like that.
Nah, I don't.
I'm really good at missing those giveaways.
Me too. I see that they're available, and then I do not download them.
I don't remember. This is a game where I think I bought it on some sale, because for the longest time I didn't realize that I had it, and then I was like, oh, I should get this game. And it's like, oh, already in your library.
And you're like, okay. Oh, fine.
I'll play it later then. Never mind.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'll be curious to hear how it goes.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear kind of a positive opinion about it. Not necessarily because I have a horse in the race, but most of the people that I heard speak about it had a lot of problems with the dialogue and the dialogue system. You're making it sound like that's not necessarily universal bummer.
I could see being a problem if you're not on top of it, you know, if you like want to spend more time kind of thinking about what you're going to say, then I could see that being kind of annoying, but I just see it as kind of like challenging instead of like frustrating, I guess.
Yeah.
That's kind of a difference. I'll probably be streaming it this Wednesday too, if you want to see a game 2/3 of the way done already.
Cool.
But
Nice. Yeah. David, how about you? What have you been playing?
Sure. So I got to the World Tier 4 out of 5 on Division 2. So that's kind of, that was the, on release, that was the highest difficulty. They've since added one more. And so that's sort of where the end game kind of pseudo starts, even though it's strictly speaking not the end game anymore. And in particular, it's just a massive difficulty spike.
And now, in terms of enemy tactics or in terms of numbers on the enemies being bigger?
I think the biggest one is in terms of enemies being able to take just basically, you reach a point where enemies take like more than a full clip to drop and can drop you in, say, like a third of their clip.
Hmm. Yeah, that's not good.
And so, and it, it's also a thing where it basically one of the big mechanics is they make it so that the capture points, basically you can complete other objectives in the area in order to level them up and they become more powerful. And then they can go up to level 4. If they're level 3 or 4, you basically completing them unlocks crafting recipes, which are one of the big things you're grinding for. That's kind of one of the main end game loots. And in order to capture them, you basically have to first fight your way through a couple waves to clear out the checkpoint, and then kind of defend the checkpoint for a couple waves as the enemy tries to retake it. The problem is, kind of like I said, there's a situation where any of the enemies can take you out very, very quickly. And you kind of at about this difficulty reach the breaking point where there's an issue where even if you're in like a fair matchup, if you're, standing right next to someone and just unloading into their stomach, you don't have enough bullets to kill them before they can kill you. And so it ends up becoming a thing where you have to, go through this big, long process to get to where you can potentially earn a reward. And then it's very possible that you'll just fail. It's like, oh, well, try again.
Ugh. Yeah, that sounds like the worst, MMO raid shit.
Yeah, I think it's a thing where I feel like there's a very good chance it will eventually get fixed, but it seems like at this point, it's kind of the moment where just a lot of the game's otherwise fairly minor flaws come together.
Okay.
Some of the other things that come with that is, for example, making a build based off of skills, the actual active special abilities you have, is incredibly broken right now. In order to put any modifications on any of your technology, which is basically where all the skills are, you have to have a certain number of points in your skill stat. However, that's literally the only thing the skill stat's good for. And in order to get any significant points, you basically need to invest solely in that. And so you pretty much end up in a situation where you can invest solely in that in order to get to the point where your skills are roughly as powerful as if you just shot the person. The other thing that's a issue is higher tier high level items, in particular the modifications for your armor. As you level up, they unlock the ability to have a larger number of, kind of stat slots. So instead of, just increasing health, they might increase health and critical hit chance and, damage. The problem is that a given item has a limited budget that's spread between all of the stats it gives you. So the end result is that low-level items are actually much more powerful than high-level items.
Oh, weird.
So, the standard strategy is basically to start another character and get to kind of mid-levels and then farm items in the PvP mode, because that gives PvP experience, not player experience.
And this can't be intentional by the devs, right? Like, no one was intending for people to use it this way.
No, so, I mean, they're definitely intending, you know, it to be, like, it's not a bug. They're intending it to be, you know, a stat budget. It's just, you know, it's another one of those instances where I feel like it's someone not thinking through in any sort of clear way where it's like, oh, yeah, you know, everyone loves playing, you know, jack of all trades, master of none characters. It's like, no, literally no one ever plays that character.
Yeah. I mean, it just sounds like they're not ready for people to have played their game this much.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah, I'm not sure, honestly. I think a lot of it seems like it's reached the point where there's a lot of starting to be clash between some of the more experimental things they're doing with like itemization and gameplay and stuff like that. And kind of reality.
Yeah.
So in response to that, I picked up Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh shit, yeah.
Because I wanted a different game to play, and I figured what better way to stick it to a developer that annoyed me than buying another one of their games. Yeah.
Take that, Ubisoft.
Got him.
Yeah, so I'm playing through a game that at least insists it's an Assassin's Creed game. I'm not entirely convinced yet.
It's different.
Yeah, have you played it?
No. But I just know that like Origins was this big reset. And Odyssey kind of like leans even heavier into the aspects that were reset, at least in terms of like, this is really, it can kind of be played almost as a life sim, weirdly, yeah. Almost, where you're kind of going around in Greece and collecting resources and like managing your own economics and stuff like that. And also there's a real heavy mythology element to it.
Yeah. And the other thing is it's very much a action RPG.
Yeah.
You're definitely, gaining experience to gain levels and, collecting, more powerful weapons and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. This time around, you're a mercenary, and it's kind of set against the background of the Peloponnesian War between Greece and Sparta.
Right.
There's a couple of interesting things. One is you can choose to play as either a male or female character.
If you do not play as Cassandra, you're a cop.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. Especially
after they insisted it was impossible to animate a woman.
Right.
Yeah, as you do. But I'm playing as Cassandra, which mainly because everything I've read just says like that's kind of the more interesting way to experience the game.
Yes. Although do not try to get into a same-sex relationship, because my understanding is the DLC railroads you into a straight into a canonically straight ending for either character.
At the very least, it railroads you into having a kid.
Okay. I am only familiar with kind of like a top line with the top line controversy.
So that's a thing. I a little bit this is predominantly from the outside looking in, I haven't gotten that far yet. Mm-hmm. I a little bit disagree with some of the controversy over that. Mm-hmm. Because I think at the very least, from what I understand, the intended message is basically that for various events, it was important. It becomes important to your character to have a kid and continue their line.
Right.
And if your character's not straight. It's sort of a situation where, you know, tragedy was the most popular form of story in that time period. Like,
right.
You know, it's not necessarily meant to be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was more being, I don't know the context. I was more being flip about that.
At the very least, like I said, I haven't played the main character at all. I do really like the voice acting for Cassandra. Mm-hmm. Although, actually, I think my favorite character, who I'm hoping continues through the game, is she kind of has little girl that's kind of somewhere between being like little sister figure and sort of proto Cassandra.
Okay. Don't talk to me or my daughter ever again. Huh? Don't talk to me or my daughter ever again. Yeah.
You know, it just ends up, you know, and she, I don't know, she's just adorable. You know, you end up, rescuing her from, bandits that are pissed off at you. And, quickly realize that, since your character's, job is being a mercenary, apparently this sort of thing happens fairly regularly. And she just responds, it's all right. Last time they gagged me so I'd stop biting. So it's just, kind of weird. It does lean into, more than other games I've seen, in that your character is explicitly a mercenary. So, you're very much encouraged to go around and just kind of play both sides of the war. And, definitely you're doing some murdering, which is something that the previous games kind of tended to discourage.
Okay.
So there's a couple of moral choices that are interesting. Most notably, in the starting island, I chose not to slaughter a family that is suffering from disease.
Okay.
And apparently, unfortunately, I just got news that apparently a plague is now decimating the island.
Dope.
So, that's sort of a thing. So, other than that, I don't know. I'm interested to see where the story goes, especially since, like, I just have no use for the Spartans, and it seems like maybe they're going to be a big thing.
Hmm.
But they're just kind of, I don't know, come across as douchey, man baby bros.
Yeah. Who's on the other side? I don't know enough about history. Is it the Athenians? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of miss the old combat system. This one's much more of a, traditional hack and slash, just kind of spam the attack button and try to parry attacks.
Mm.
It doesn't have, the ability to, like, disarm enemies and, things like that from the previous game.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a yet, or is that a, like, period?
I think period. Although one of the weird things is your character very quickly, and even to some degree from the beginning, gets the ability to, like, do moves that are explicitly supernatural. You start out with the ability, like, you cannot die from fall damage.
Cool.
That sounds good.
but, like, it's a little weird. Similarly, you have a eagle companion that you can very explicitly, like, send to scout and apparently see through its eyes.
Cool.
And then you quickly get the ability to do things like sheath your sword and fire, or you know, like shoot an arrow up in the air and have a rain of arrows, you know, come down on your enemies.
Yeah.
So they made the game fun.
Yeah.
But it, a little bit bothers me that like no one ever really comments on that, on the fact.
The historical part, like, so the interesting part of the history in these games to me was always the city, like the cities and the landmarks themselves, the kind of hyper dramatized versions of the people. But as far as the events, or is this realistic for the time or whatever, I couldn't give less of a shit. Like, right. Even going back to Assassin's Creed 2 or Brotherhood, where you were doing missions with Leonardo da Vinci, and it was just like, well, here's this batshit thing that we know from his you know, sketchbooks or whatever. Well, here's what this is in real life, you know, or in this game. Like, it doesn't matter if it's realistic, it's fun. I like it when that series will lean into it.
Sure, yeah. Totally. Yeah, I don't know quite how it's, if it is or is not going to go with that, just because there's, like, I think the only character from vaguely that time period that I know of historically would be, like, Leonidas, and he's very explicitly dead.
I mean, it takes place a long, I mean, this takes place a long time after Leonidas died.
Right. A long time after Thermopylae. Like, if we're talking like even, you know, any of the Hellenistic period before Rome, mm-hmm. like he's probably the only person I could name.
You get like you're probably like hanging around like Archimedes or.
I guess that's a good yeah. point.
There's a lot of philosophers and stuff like that probably.
True.
Yeah.
A lot of homeless.
Probably. A mission with Erasmus where you measure the circumference of the earth or something.
See, that's my
just
chance.
Keep running, you know, eventually you'll get there. In terms of the what you're saying with the kind of historical locations, it seems to me like maybe it leans a little less heavy on the actual, like, you know, super detailed recreations of cities, and more heavy on emphasizing like island hopping,
yeah,
and kind of recreating, you know, as the name goes, sort of the Odyssey experience of just like sailing around, you know, the archipelago, you know, being a hero.
Yeah, no, so. I dig that. Yeah, I think I picked this game up. I picked it up when it was on sale on Amazon for like $20 a while back. Also, because if you get this game season pass, you also get the like remaster of Assassin's Creed 3. And I never played that. Then I know it's not worth playing, but I at least want to see it because I'm interested in the American Revolution stuff.
It's a super long game.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of content there.
I don't know. I just want to at least get a taste of that. Nice.
So one last thing. The one definite standout feature is the pretty much if you're playing the game right, the very first thing you unlock is the like this is Sparta kick.
Okay.
Wait. Are there just holes everywhere on the map that you can kick people into?
Well, one opens up behind them. It's like a Mortal Kombat fatality.
Yeah. Like it's very, very explicit. Like, you know, one of the very much intended features is like, hey, guess what? Greece is pretty much all mountains. You should totally kick some dudes off some cliffs.
Nice.
Or in ship combat, kick some dudes overboard.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'll be curious to hear more about that as you go through.
Definitely.
Yeah. Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, I'll be quick. I have been playing a shit ton more Devil May Cry 5.
Okay.
So the last time we talked, I think I was just settling into V as a character and had not beaten the game for the first time. I have since beaten the game, the game again on the next difficulty level up, and am about halfway through beating it a third time on the Dante Must Die difficulty level.
Okay.
In which, one, all the numbers are bigger, so enemies have four times the health and deal four times the damage to you.
Okay.
which means that many attacks can either one or two shot you. The second thing is that enemy placement has been completely remixed. There are fights in places there weren't fights before. Enemies spawn in configurations that you didn't see before. And so you're fighting kind of end game level enemies right off the bat. And they kind of combine them together in really, really sadistic ways. Like, all right, let's put this enemy that really punishes you for playing passively in the same room with the enemy that punishes you for playing aggressively. Mm-hmm. And have fun with that. Yeah. Or why not two of them or three of them each? So it's just, it is, you know, really upping the difficulty, but also in a way that truly rewards mastery. I not only did I kind of settle into V, but I also unlocked Dante as a character, which happens, you know, over the course of a normal playthrough. And why not? He's the main character of the series.
Yeah, okay.
and with him just comes a bevy of crazy, over the top weapon ideas. I don't know who played it, played DMC3 and who didn't, but does anyone remember the Cerberus?
I've never played a Devil May Cry game.
Okay, David, this is the nunchucks, except it's three chucks.
Yeah.
Tri-chucks.
The tri-chucks, yes. Well,
I think that would be a horrible idea.
Yeah, except he makes it look so good. In Devil May Cry 5, they come back, only now they're the King Cerberus, and they not only have a form of kind of three-point nunchucks, but then they have David, you'll know what it's called, basically like three staves chained together. Like short, I don't know what you would call that. Maybe it's not an actual weapon. Staff? A three-section staff, there you go.
So they're like end-to-end? Basically,
end-to-end, yeah, with just short chains, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was actually literally what I was looking up to make sure it wasn't this before I said it, but the comment I was going to go is, literally, there is a legitimate weapon. They could have made it, and yeah, that's it.
No, they went with the weapon that is more likely to hit you.
Yes. Because it's cooler. But so that weapon, so there's the, you know, three-point form, there's the three-section staff form, and then the final form is just a regular staff. And within that one weapon, there are whole different move sets that you can use and combine and mix up between those three forms of one weapon. And that is one of, I think, like six or seven weapons available to Dante across the course of the game. Hmm. So the depth, and you can switch between all the weapons at will, at any point. So the depth of combat is just amazing. Furthermore, anyone who's played the series will know that Dante has four different modes that you can pick at the start of a level. So you can be a trickster, which focuses on dodging, sword master, which focuses, guess what, on swords. I forget, it's like gun boy and royal guard.
You pick those at the beginning of the level. Like in DMC3, you could swap between them at will, couldn't you?
Oh, I remember having to pick at the start of the level. Maybe you could always swap.
You have to pick.
Oh. Yeah, in DMC5, you can swap at will. So now you've got layers of, just with the one character Dante, you've got, you know, seven different weapons at your disposal, each of which probably has, you know, two or three forms of the weapon that you can then combine into different styles that you can swap out at will. Say nothing of the additional six guns in your arsenal, and like just the amount of crazy shit you can do with combat in this game is amazing. So and I've been having a lot of fun with that.
So I would actually, for me, this was kind of my main criticism of where the games was going, because I feel like it's, you know, it's kind of the perfection, you know, isn't when there's nothing more to add, it's when there's nothing more to remove. Like, I feel like they took a game that it's, what made it great was the fact that it had a, you know, very logical, you know, intuitive control scheme, and just made it into like a fighting game, you know, better memorize all these combos.
There, not a single combo is required to beat the game. Like you can
blunt beat force the game by just killing everything with ebony and ivory. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, but that's not engaging with the system on its terms, right? You're trying to get you're trying to get score, you're trying to get combos and stuff like that.
Right.
Trying to end this with like S pluses or whatever.
And I think that's my issue with it is that it's not a my impression was rather than it being a a clever way to do that in terms of like, hey, here's a here's a tool set, figure out the best way to do it. It's just it sort of seems like, hey, let's just give you more stuff than you could ever possibly use so that of course you can do it.
I mean I can see how that would throw someone, certainly. Yeah. And I so you know I wouldn't begrudge someone who came to the game and was like, ah, this is too much.
At what point in the past of the series do you think they kind of lost their way and made it too much? Because from my recollection, it was almost always about kind of over the top, going for score, going for ratings.
So style, that's please. The thing. But what I'm saying is, it's not that; it's the control scheme.
Okay.
So it was a thing where, like, in basically the first four games, they had that, but there was a very logical and simple mapping between what you do with the controls and the attacks you perform, as opposed to it being more of a fighting game where it's just like mashing in combos.
Mm-hmm.
And that finesse is still there. I mean, there's still one button for attacking with your sword and one button for attacking with your gun. And everything flows from there. It also ramps you up via characters. So you start with Nero, who just has the one sword and the one gun. Mm-hmm. And you kind of learn on him. Then you go over to V, who's got... It's a very different, weird concept. It doesn't play anything like the other two. But that's got its own learning curve. But it's just he's got his parrot and he's got his cat. And that's about it. And then you go to Dante, who kind of progressively unlocks these weapons. And that is it's a very satisfying curve and almost maybe not a curve, but a pendulum swing back and forth between just trying to survive. And then all of a sudden these enemies are feeling less and less like a threat and you're focused on style. And then you go to the next difficulty and you're just trying to survive and you gradually kind of master it and get to focus on style more. And it's constantly cycling me through that, which I really, really appreciate.
Cool.
One other just interesting thing, the mechanics of playing a game, the physicality of it, the control scheme, while very simple and intuitive, just puts buttons in bad places. So for several of the characters, you want to be charging your gun by holding down the button as you're fighting otherwise. And then you can release a big attack whenever you've got a free moment. However, if gun is on square and your sword attacks are on triangle, that's incredibly difficult to hold down square while tapping, triangle with any kind of rhythm or regularity to it. So I kind of did a little research and have switched up where the buttons are on the controller to where gun is now on like the L1 button, which makes it a lot easier to pull off some of the more complicated combos, or at least make sure that you're using your gun to full effect. And it's interesting because now I've gotten to the point where every single character I have customized the control scheme in some way, but it's not uniform across characters. And I only did this when I got to Dante Must Die mode, the difficulty I'm on now, meaning I had really ingrained the base control scheme in my brain. And it took like one or two, maybe three sessions of just outright sucking and looking like an idiot before it really started to click. But now I've come back even more powerful.
It's hard to update your hands.
Oh my God. It's incredible. I'm having that on other games that I've been playing. Risk of Rain and The Cycle have similar control schemes, but one or two buttons are different, and I cannot go back and forth between. it's just it makes you klutzy. But anyway, I'm over that hump in Devil May Cry, and I'm glad I did. But needless to say, I'm hyper enjoying the game. I'm looking forward to continuing to play it for a while, and I'm eyeing maybe dipping back into the older games, but who knows?
Yeah.
This one will keep me occupied for a good long time.
Nice. Well, it's cool that you got a hold of Dante, because or at least you got a hold of Dante, and you also seems like you got your head around V.
Yes, very much so. Although, like I said, it's kind of fun that he plays so differently than anything else.
Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I have any more questions for you.
Well, then let's go on to
multiplayer.
The multiplayer, where usually we ask you a question. hey, Dennis, do you have anything you want to say about that?
I'm sorry. I did bad.
That Dennis forgot to put up the multiplayer, and I didn't check until an hour before recording. So we're going to do a little bit of free play left over from last time. Not going to do very many because we were kind of aiming for this to be a shorter episode this week, but enough to give you a bit of a taste. So I'm going to work backwards through these. Lucas asks, what is a story or mechanical trope in games that always gets under your skin? Bonus points if it is totally irrational.
Box puzzles.
Oh, yeah.
When there was a box puzzle in God of War 3, I was like, all right, come, really?
Yeah, that's good. It's kind of a thing that they do. Yeah.
Oh, well.
How about you, David?
I think I'm gonna have to go with characters reminding you to play the game if you're like looking at a menu too long. Just in case you forgot.
Yeah. impatience barks. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'll go with escort missions seem to always be like pretty bad.
Yeah.
Maybe tied with stealth missions.
in non-stealth games. Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile that with your love for Resident Evil 4?
There's
no stealth, but I mean, there's a lot of escort stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not too differentiated from the single player game, so like there's a few parts where you have to protect the president's daughter or whatever,
Ashley,
and you're like in a separate area from her, but I feel like a lot of times you're just running through the map the same as you would be with a single player.
Yeah,
so it doesn't feel like a noticeably different game. Yeah. but maybe what that speaks to is there's not a lot of, oh, you didn't protect her this time, we got to restart the level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
Let's see here. For me, this could work for any media, but it's especially bad in video games just because of, you know, just immature storytelling kind of stuff. But anytime the story is only possible when people don't talk to each other, like, just all of this could have been avoided if you said one fucking thing about what you intend. Yeah. I don't care for that one bit. Talk to each other. Like, it can solve the problems. Like, if I know what I'm going into. Yeah. Let's see here. Charles asks a question about Sekiro and the easy mode difficulty stuff. We've talked about that in the past, so I'm going to pass over that, but I want to make sure.
Cheat yourself. Game. Learn nothing.
Did it. I love that. I love that meme. That meme is really good. did you see the XCOM one, Dennis?
Yes.
Yes. They voiceovered it.
Amazing.
So good.
Yeah. Martinus asks, besides Demons and Dark Souls, which, quote, recent games or game series do you consider to be the most influential in shaping modern gaming? 100% Minecraft.
Yeah, Minecraft is a good one.
Yeah, between crafting and survival elements, that has worked its way into so much other stuff. They were not the first to do that. They were not even the best to do that. But that, I think, that popularity has spread to so much other stuff.
I think I'd say Candy Crush Saga.
No?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if Farmville is a recent game, but I would say that.
I mean, Minecraft came out a decade ago, so...
I was trying to think what AAA game popularized microtransactions. Farmville might be the answer, even though it's not your traditional AAA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also Fortnite, obligatory Fortnite reference.
Oh, yeah.
Although, isn't that basically a Plunkbat ripoff?
Which is an H1Z1 ripoff, and down we go. Yeah.
And Fortnite also has the building and crafting stuff, bringing it all the way back around. Yeah. Dan asks, I just picked up Dark Souls and I'm currently making my way through the Undead Parish. If you each have one piece of advice, what would it be? I'm playing offline. Appreciated. Cheers, ears. I like that. I like the sign off of cheers, ears. learn about scaling, so weapon scaling and upgrading, just like that. That will get you over a lot of stuff you're about to get to. Yeah, that's my big one.
My advice is don't listen to me and listen to Cole, because I've not played the game and he has.
Dennis, you played it.
I'm gonna say that don't obsess over your magic bullet weapon or armor or whatever. Like, literally everyone can get through this game with whatever they want as long as they're willing to stick to it. And so you should just do what you enjoy. There's a way to make it work.
Also, hold the B or circle button to run.
That would... It just got dark in here. Is that some shade?
It's just a very funny story for people who weren't aware. I mean, it's an old thing. Many years ago, went over to Dennis's house when he was working at Ornstein and Smough, and I'm like, why are you walking to get to Ornstein and Smough? And I'm like, walking? I'm like, yeah, no, like, you just hold down circle to run. You had gotten all the way up to that point without doing the dashing.
Shattered. It was easily 50 attempts in. You guys, I think we could be. I mean, I could have saved a year off my life had I known.
It wouldn't have been one of the good years. So,
nah.
I'm really sorry. My feed barbled out at the very start of this. Is this explicitly Bloodborne that's being asked about?
No, Dark Souls.
Oh, okay, because I. Well,
specifically
I'm going
early
to
game
give
Dark
my
Souls.
Bloodborne effect response because it's funny here, and I was going to give it even before I knew it was funny, which is in Bloodborne, never run. stealth is incredibly effective in Bloodborne, and I've found that you can get through a huge part of the game by just you know, walking slowly. You know, a lot of the things that normally ambush you do not. For Dark Souls, I got nothing.
Okay. Michael asks, what was the last movie you guys have seen at home or in theaters? I watched Battle Angel Alita myself, Michael says.
Ooh, I wanted to go see that one. I think it's still out. But yeah. I can't find anyone else that likes like
anyone
giant 3D spectacle.
Has anyone heard that good?
I heard not good things about it.
I heard good things. But yeah, I have no.
Who saw Endgame over the weekend? Because that's the last one that I got.
Not me.
I did not.
All right.
I was just waiting for the crowds to die down, and I don't really hang out in places where spoilers will happen. So
fair.
This one, I don't know if this counts as a movie, but I just last night watched Nanette with Hannah Gadsby. She's stand-up.
Oh, it's like her semi-dramatized stand-up kind of deal?
It was fantastic. Nice. Yeah. So you'll laugh, you'll cry, and it's excellent.
Cool. How about you, David?
Yeah, I think for me, I saw Black Panther. And really, really enjoyed it. Also, really enjoyed that all of the fight choreography is from the martial art I practice.
Oh, nice.
So that was enjoyable.
Stick fights, right?
Well, okay. That too. I was meant more, though, specifically the tiger style sea lot.
Okay.
So all of the quadrupedal like choreography and kicks and stuff.
Nice. For me, it's been I do not watch enough movies. The last movie I watched probably was Stalker when I was doing research for the Stalker Shatter of Chernobyl
That sounds sweet
episode. Yeah, it's
a long movie.
It's a long, slow movie that is mostly sermons put over desolate you know, scenery and things like that, factories and stuff. I almost wish that I would have read the script. I feel like I would have gotten as much out of it, but it was an experience to watch. So, yeah. Let's see here. Charles asks, is anyone else hyped for Link's Awakening on the Switch? We can just go around doing yeses or nos. Yes.
Nah.
I never played the original, so I'll say no, but I might play it. It might be cool, but I don't have internal hype, you know?
Yeah. David?
Yeah, I got nothing.
Okay. Let's see here. Jonathan asks, you are a story writer for a game series of your choice. Where are you taking the series next? E.g. XCOM goes on the offensive and takes on the aliens on their home turf.
Oh, well, now that has to be mine. Are you kidding me?
You can take that, yeah.
Or XCOM, but you're the aliens.
Hmm. Ooh.
It's like Left 4 Dead 2.
that would be pretty good. I think. Yeah. Let's see. For me, I don't know. I would like just another Silent Hill. That is such a boring answer.
But no, it's not. How would you make it your own and unique?
Yeah. I used to have an answer for this, but I don't know. Nope. Sorry. I'm gonna have to tap out. I'm petering out. I had a place where a kind of protagonist that I wanted Silent Hill to have, but no. No, oh no, I know what it was. Silent Hill, but with a firefighter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. I like that idea of somebody who in their routine life tries to save people being brought in and having all of that kind of horrific imagery in their head already. That may not be exactly it, but that is at least one of them. How about you? How about you, Ben?
Man, that's your answer is well more thought out than anything I want to come up with. For me, I'm just thinking of like, what games could I get Obsidian to write and claim are like, yeah, let's do this.
Where would you take Coder?
Yeah, that okay. So that was one of the options. Just continue Knights of the Old Republic 2, right? It ends with your main character kind of drifting off into space on a ship by himself or mm-hmm. herself. So there's pretty much anything you could go from there. So
yeah,
I would continue that story.
David.
So I think something that came up on the Slack a little while back, I really want to see someone do some sort of either like racing game or vehicular combat MMO.
Oh yeah, you want mm-hmm. you want the modern day auto assault.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice. And finally here we have Noah who asks, can games be good for you? Absolutely. Games can yep. be as good for you as books, movies, any other piece of media, especially if they are something that lets you bond with people that you care about or lets you find new friends.
And where else would I learn how to murder?
Don't want to do it through Google. They can track that.
Yep. No. Feds are on you like that. I mean, does anybody else have an answer they want to give?
I feel like it's in the premise of the gaming podcast.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Does anybody else want to offer a spirited defense for the idea? Because I think that Noah agrees with us, but also is maybe I think looking for more detail.
There was that game. Oh, go ahead, David.
I was going to say, like, I think there's definitely a lot to be said for, like, exercising your mind, you know, that those sorts of aspects, you know, particularly for, you know, some of the, like, more, you know, open world, you know, exploration oriented games mm-hmm. that kind of pull in a lot of... I guess ways of thinking that people don't really have nearly as much call for anymore.
Right, right. So is it like situational awareness and expanding your kind of bubble or sphere?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just saw an article that there was a game that detects Alzheimer's before other methods can.
Oh, I would not want to play that.
Yeah, or you know, and who knows what you can do preventatively, but yeah, just the idea that can be used to kind of get at things in a way that others might not be able to.
Yeah.
So how long is it before your insurance provider starts mandating certain games?
No, geez. Yeah, no, we immediately took this and turned it dystopic, and I wanted to end on a positive thing. But Ben, do you have a reason why that might be good for you?
Why they would be good for you? I mean, they help. Develop the way I think of it is like I think there's a lot of implicit knowledge you gain when you play a video game because it's like there's a lot of like high level thinking going on in games just with like their physics and things like that. And mm-hmm. so like, I feel like things like even like, what is it? The not the slow stop or whatever, but the smooth stop or whatever, smooth step function, you know, mm-hmm. like things like that, that are just like built into like animations. You just, I think, implicitly pick up on. So yeah. I don't know. I just think there's a lot of benefits to just doing that.
But. Yeah. This is something we talked about in the Life is Strange episode of Watch Out for Fireballs. However, I want to bring it here, you know, something that might be a little bit more digestible, something that I really value about games that do choice well, moral choice or ethical choice. Think Life is Strange, think The Witcher, whatever game you feel challenged you. I like those stories that give you the choice, because it kind of forces you to, oftentimes under duress or with incomplete information, evaluate your own values, do a gut check, mm-hmm. and apply them to new or novel or fantastic situations. And there is something very affirming about that, about checking yourself and measuring what your stance is on those things. I think that is valuable too, because games can also offer an opportunity for further insight, right? For further introspection. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody. Some of these came from last year, but those were free play multiplayer. Watch on Monday afternoons for other multiplayer prompts to go up at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Thank you so much to everybody who participates in those.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we bring up something that is happening in the news here recently in video games that we are excited about. So I will start out first. So Cyan, the developer of Myst, they announced a while ago a new game that they are making called Firmament. They put it on Kickstarter. It looked like it wasn't going to make its goal to be made. And the community came together, and at the very end, it actually exceeded the goal. So this game is going to be made. This is kind of a cool, more steampunky version of Myst, kind of continuing the abduction style surreal. So surreal first person puzzle game, and I'm super happy it's going to exist. Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what are you excited about?
Yeah, I'm excited about new console generation hype. That is not sarcastic. I'm serious. First off, when they announced PlayStation 5, the first thing they did was assuage the one fear that I had, which is that the game or that the new console would not support PSVR. So they said right off the top, hey, PlayStation 5 is coming. You will be able to use your PSVR with it.
Good.
So check. That's awesome. Yeah. And so with that out of the way, it's just kind of now I get to sit back and just enjoy the new craziness that happens. And it's going to be rough. It always is. There's always ideas that don't quite work out. But it's also just, I mean, it's like moving to a new house or starting a new relationship. Like it's an excuse to experiment and just try something new or kind of, you know, just explore the space a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like we're getting to the point in Days Gone. We didn't talk about it in this episode, but Days Gone is kind of the wet fart ending to a console cycle. Just like, yep. Well, it's PlayStation 4 has regressed back to the generic mean. So let's get the next console rolling here.
Yep. Yeah. And all those games we were looking forward to, they might be generation straddlers. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, nice. Again, that'll come with some rough parts. That's unfortunate. But I think net, it will be a lot of fun and refreshing to try some new stuff.
We're going to find out more in about a month and a half, I would wager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I think I shared the wrong type of article. I shared a news article and not something I'm hyped about. So I'm going to say I'm hyped about nothing this week. Okay. Or I'll just jump on Dennis's and say, yeah, generic PS5. That sounds cool.
Yeah. Cool. How about you, David?
Yeah, so this was actually something Dennis brought to my attention. Apparently, it's been revealed that there's been unauthorized City of Heroes servers running in secret for a while.
And
the group that did it then released the source code for the for the servers, and they're sort of in a currently, in a, on again, off again, kind of limbo state as people try to get it up and running. And I haven't checked, but it seemed like there was actually maybe a fairly good chance that NCSoft might officially give it their blessing.
Oh shit! Yeah, that was going to be my question: are they getting cease and desist?
Yeah. What I'm hoping is that it's been released sufficiently to the wild that that isn't actually viable.
Hmm.
but it, like I said, it's kind of sounding like they might be able to do something. To me, this seems like this would be the ideal time for them to pull a new Coke thing and just be like, oh yeah, well, we're starting up the official service again. Give us money.
Yeah. That might be.
I definitely would.
Yeah. No, just do it. You guys still exist, and NCSoft is still a publisher, I think.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. Because maybe we've gone over this before, but my understanding is it was never shut down because it wasn't popular or making money. It was simply shut down in order to force the developers to work on something else.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's that'll work out. Oh, well, hopefully something comes of that. It's always always interesting when the fan community gets a hold of that stuff, especially from an archival point of view.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, how do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Okay. Thank you everybody for listening to this. Most of all, we want to hear how you feel about the format change. We attempted to make this episode a little bit shorter than usual, just for kind of personal reasons this time. It'll probably find its level at around between an hour and a half to an hour and 45 per episode. That's kind of what I want to cap it out at. But do you like this? Do you see any room, any obvious things that we might want to take into consideration? Just let us know either on Facebook in the comments for this episode or in the Slack channel. We just want to hear what you think. Otherwise, though, there's the usual stuff you can do: Patreon, Facebook, and just coming back next week. Am I forgetting anything?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can watch me struggle through Dante Must Die in Devil May Cry 5 at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I'm David Meismith. You can watch me probably by calling up the NSA.
It's nice that they're responding to requests like that, and you can just watch anyone now. You can watch me on Twitch at Merkleby, and I'm Ben Merkel.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. I had a pretty dry week this week. I only have one. It's hard to update your hands. Yeah. Dennis, what you got?
I was bad. And not only did I forget the multiplayer, I forgot to write titles.
Oh, okay. Ben?
Uh-oh. Strike three. I was going to say wet fart of the PS4. I thought I liked that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I had nothing. I...
Usually it's only one of us.
It's the new format. That's what did it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Growing pains. How do you guys feel about it's hard to update your hands?
I like it.
Okay. I don't want to put wet fart in a title. I'm sorry. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go to bed.
All right. Good hanging out.
All right. Take care.
See ya.
Goodbye.
See ya.